I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Posh Nosh Gal, and I'm with Sam Hart, one of Britain's most successful restaurateurs. Born into the hospitality industry, he and his brother James have built an empire that is known and loved by just about every restaurant goer in London. As well as the El Pastor chain and the fabulous Michelin-starred Barrafina restaurants, the Hart brothers are the owners of the timeless Quo Vadis restaurant in the heart of Soho. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Lena. It's nice to, very nice to meet you.
Well, thank you so much for giving us your time today. How are you spending your days?
Well, there's a sort of, my days are divvied up into a mixture of different things. There's a little, some work going on, but, you know, for most of lockdown, actually, we've been pretty limited to what we can actually achieve. Mm-hmm. There's been quite a lot of gardening, quite a lot of exercise going on, quite a lot of shopping and cooking. So, you know, it's been remarkably busy somehow or another.
Yeah, well, it sounds familiar. And the time is just flying by. I don't know where 2 months have gone.
Yeah, I know. It's disappeared, isn't it?
Yeah. So, Sam, restaurants are one of the businesses that will be hit hardest during this pandemic. Tell us about how you're dealing with this and the things that you're having to go through to support your restaurants.
So, I mean, you know, we've been very lucky with the government furlough scheme, which has been, you know, amongst the most generous of its kind that we've heard of. So that was really a massive lifeline for us, which was meant that, you know, during lockdown when we closed, the one thing we haven't had to worry about is making sure we can retain our staff. So we've been able to do that. So that was, which was our primary concern anyway. So that's taken a lot of the pressure off. But I suppose the easy bit in a funny way has been the lockdown itself. And it will get much more challenging as we try and reopen because, you know, we still need to negotiate with our landlords. We need to get up to date with our supplier payments, and we need to negotiate and navigate, you know, trying to run a restaurant with quite different criteria, I suppose, in a temporary new world. Let's hope temporary new world post opening.
Yeah, I'm sure it is temporary. So Barrafina is a bar style concept where guests are seated in close proximity to each other. It's also very close to chefs as well. How would you manage the social distancing aspect once we open up again?
Yeah, so we've been looking quite carefully at that. And the key question here is what the distance, the mandatory distance will have to be. So obviously all the chat from the government so far has been about two people saying 2 meters apart. We were actually hearing from inside sort of government, people inside sort of quite high up in the Hospitality Association, that they are making progress with persuading government that 2 meters does not work for the majority of restaurants. Yeah. And that we're more likely to be facing a 1 meter separation between parties. And although that's not confirmed, if that was the case, and we're hoping it will be, we sort of working at ways to think about, we have ways where we can make that work for Barrafina. So option one is we have, you know, a group of two, and then we leave out a stool, and then we insert a sort of, you know, Perspex screen or something. We try and make it nice and pretty, separating, you know, the two parties that way. And again, we're still waiting for definitive guidance, but all the chat we're hearing is that where you cannot, you know, enforce a 2 meter or 1 meter distance, a Perspex screen does the trick. So that's one possibility. Mm-hmm. Possibility number two is, you know, most Barrafina's got a space for a queue behind where people are sitting. So obviously the queue is not gonna be possible or desirable even in a COVID environment. So the idea there maybe is that we have, you know, two seats at the bar and then two seats behind facing the other way on the shelf of the queue, and you sort of zigzag it like that, and we were just in measuring up actually last week. We think we with that sort of zigzag format we can get almost all the original covers in, with a little bit of outside, a little bit of, you know, three of our Barrafina's got private dining rooms, right. And So we're planning, we're not expecting events to be busy when we go back to work. So we can put tables and chairs, you know, at the correct spacings in the private dining rooms. So there's, you know, although, you know, it's you know, it's not the easiest of restaurants in this sort of situation. Yeah. We do think we can, well, if it's a meter distance, we can work around it. If it's a 2 meter distance, we wouldn't be able to open, I don't think, you know, whilst the 2 meters is in place.
Right. Well, you're obviously thinking about it in great detail, but there may be limitations to the numbers of covers per premises. What is your typical break-even occupancy?
Well, you see, so interestingly, with Barrafina, on a busy evening, about half the people within the premises would be seated at the bar, and the same number again would be standing in the queue, so which effectively doubles our capacity. So we could sort of, we think we can operate at half capacity, because the bit we'd lose is the queue, which currently, as I say, we wouldn't be doing anyway. And then we'd just have the seats taken at the bar. So, you know, it's that occupancy question is difficult. So with Barrafina, if we just lost the queue, retained all the bar stalls, we can function like that. You know, and then, you know, we'll go temporarily at least to booking or to, and or probably with as well a virtual queue to manage the two things at once. Right. So it's, and then we think that we probably won't open every single lunch and dinner of the week. So, you know, the services that were marginal in the good times, we just won't bother with. So then you're just, so, you know, you're focusing just on the busy time. So, I mean, you know, it's, there's a lot of variables, but we think we can make it work.
Well, I've been speaking with.
That's the key.
Pardon?
At 1 meter distance, we can make it work. That is the key part. That is the really big condition to all of this. At 2 meters, it becomes a very different thing.
Yeah. So I've been speaking with many chefs, but as a business owner, the responsibility and the pressure must be immense. How are you coping with that?
Well, the pressure's coming. So, I mean, yes, there is a pressure, but like I say, we've been in lockdown, which has meant that there's been very little to do much. You know, we didn't have any money, so we couldn't pay our suppliers and our landlords at the moment. So we're working at refinancing, so we can do that, and we will do that before we've opened. Our staff have been on furlough. There's been very little until very recently guidelines about when we could open or what the rules might be. So although, of course, there's a sort of impending storm cloud and the pressure of that, you know, we're not there yet, but there will be. I mean, the pressure's about to come, because it's the pressure it comes when we can open, when furlough finishes, when we're paying our staff, and we're having to very quickly make decisions, business decisions, about how we get it right, you know, within the new framework. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, that all has to be done very, very quickly. And of course, because we have 10 restaurants, across 10 restaurants, that's a lot to try and think about. So, you know, there is a lot to consider.
So let me take you back to how you started out in the industry. After university in Manchester, you went to work as a broker in Mexico, which is notoriously known as one of the most dangerous places on earth. Why Mexico of all places?
I travelled in Latin America between school and university, and I loved Latin America. I was keen to learn more Spanish, and I was working as a broker in London for a company that was opening across Latin America, opening Brazil and Argentina, Chile, Mexico. And I expressed an interest in going, and they said, yeah, sure, look, we'll send you to the first, you know, the first one that comes along, which happened to be Mexico City. And then loved Mexico City, hated broking, and left the broking business and stayed in Mexico.
And you moved into bars and nightclubs from that point?
Yes, I opened a nightclub there in 1997, I think, so quite a long time ago now. Yeah. Yes, it amazingly was a sort of success and was around for 10 years. I was only in Mexico for 5 years, but it kept going after I left.
Yeah. And well, then you had a brief stint in Barcelona. Is that where your love of food began?
No. So I grew up in a foodie family. My father's a hotelier and restaurateur. My mother's a very good cook. And she'd grown up in Mallorca, in fact. So she, although she's half Bulgarian, half Scottish by blood, she grew up as a Spanish girl in all intents and purposes in a small Mallorcan village. Yeah. So, you know, eating at home, the food was good, but also very Spanish, Spanish theme, you know, like it was for rural England in the 1970s, it was quite Spanish. But also I had exposure to fine dining style restaurants with my father, who, you know, he's held the longest running Michelin star in the country. So he's sort of been in that business for 40 years, whatever it is, a long time. So I was always keen on food. And then living in Barcelona is when we were thinking of opening another nightclub, a sister nightclub to our Mexican one in Barcelona. Right. Got to Barcelona, that quickly, it became apparent it just wasn't going to happen. It was too difficult. So I was in the lucky situation where, you know, as a 24-year-old or 5-year-old, where we had money coming in from Mexico, but I didn't really have a job or anything to do on a day-to-day basis. So I used to pot around the markets and the restaurants of Barcelona. That's where I really learned about Spanish food and Spanish ingredients. It took my love of Spanish cuisine up several notches.
Amazing. And I mean, you made many efforts to work outside of the UK. There was Mexico and then Barcelona. What was the reason that you didn't start in the UK in the first place?
Oh, I was still sort of young and irresponsible and didn't want to settle down in London. So, you know, I was up for more adventure and excitement than London could give, I think.
Well, eventually you did come back to the UK, and your first restaurant in London was Fino, which opened in 2003, which is a great success, even though it had a bit of a bumpy start. Tell us about when Jane Rayner came to visit.
It was one of those days where we'd opened, and, you know, my brother is my brother Eddie, actually. So I have two other brothers, but I opened Fino with Eddie, and he had more experience working in restaurants than I did. I'd had zero experience in restaurants, really. And we opened and got a very good review from Jan Moyer, who's the Telegraph critic at the time, which meant that the sort of next week we were suddenly packed. Right. And we had this sort of awful Tuesday lunch where we were full, completely full. It was like 120 covers. It was only about 5 or 6 days in, so we didn't really know what we were doing. Jay was only actually one of the critics that was there at the time. You know, there was Susan, who used to write for Zagat, and we had there was another proper mainstream critic. And anyway, unbeknownst to us at the time, Jay's lunch had been a complete fiasco. He'd sort of sat down and ordered, and then nothing happened for ages and ages and ages. And then someone brought him back the menu and asked him if he wanted any pudding. And then, you know, I think the whole thing was a complete disaster. But anyway, there we go. These things happen.
Well, it was a success for a while. What was the reason that you closed it?
Well, it became a little bit dated, I suppose. So it was around for 16 years, which is not bad. 16, was it? 14, four, maybe 14 years. Anyway, quite a long time. Mm-hmm. Its location wasn't great. So Charlotte Street, which is a great restaurant street, but it was tucked around the corner in a basement. And the basement was difficult to, you know, get people down. You know, and then just the sort of decor and the food was always good. And I hope the service was good as well. But just that it just became slightly out of date. I think we ran it for 12 years, actually. But so it's funny with restaurants is that not all of them stand the test of time, you know, for many, many years. You know, in fact, anything over 10, anything over 5, some people think is good going. So, you know, it had a good innings, but it just felt like the world had moved on and there was nothing. You know, we tried little refurbs and we used to redesign the menu. So we tried to refresh it, but for whatever reason, it didn't make the difference it needed to.
Right. And I mean, in the meantime, you actually opened Barrafina and you managed to move the whole team over. Was that loyalty or good business?
No, I'll tell you what actually happened. So there's a few missing years in between there. So we opened Barrafina in 2007. whilst Fino was still open.
Yeah.
And then we opened Barrafina Adelaide Street in 2014, again with Fino still open. And it's when we opened Barrafina Drury Lane in 2015, it must have been, or 16, that it coincided with Fino becoming sort of, you know, a more of an unviable proposition. So that's when we closed Fino. We took the team and did the opening of Drury Lane, it was then.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, our team, we had no problem with our team there. There were a great group of people who, you know, enjoyed cooking our food and enjoyed working for us. So it wasn't a problem moving them over.
Yeah. And how did the concept for Barrafina come about?
It came from a restaurant in Barcelona called Cal Pep. And Cal Pep is somewhere I discovered when I was there, you know, after Mexico, before London. And, you know, it might sound familiar. It was a sort of tapas bar with stools only, the cooking right behind the bar, big focus on quality of ingredients and relatively simple cooking, lots of specials. So, you know, and we became good friends with Pep, actually. So when we said to him, look, we're thinking of doing something like this in London, he was incredibly helpful. He showed us around and, you know, showed us how it all worked. So it was, and we remain on very friendly terms. The nice bit was, is that when Barrafina, you know, started to become quite well known in London, people like you would ask the question, where was the idea from? We'd always say, it was Cal Pep. We never made any secret of it. And so he started to get loads of tourists from the UK
and
come and visit Cal Pep on the back of that. So we managed to repay him to a degree, at least.
Oh, that's lovely. That's such a nice story. And all three of your Barrafina restaurants, they're all fairly close to each other, walking distance if you're fast on your feet. What was the thought process behind keeping them all so close together?
Well, we had an amazing time when we started. We had Fino, we had Quo Vadis, we had the three central London Barrafinas. And we could walk to any of the restaurants within 7 minutes. You know, nothing was further than 7 minutes from each other, which was amazing, you know, because we were still a mama papa operation. We didn't have, you know, operations teams and HR teams. It was just me and my brother Eddie doing it all. So it made a huge logistical sense to keep things close. You know, plus Barrafina is ideally suited to, you know, central city locations. So it's sort of, you know, it needs footfall and lots of people. And you know, so Covent Garden, or the two sites in Covent Garden and Soho, had all those things. So yeah, it was the sort of combination of those things, really.
And I've read somewhere that you've always wanted a smaller, more manageable establishment, but you've recently branched out into King's Cross at the Coal Drop Yard. How did that decision come about?
I first went to meet Argent, who are the landlords up there, quite a long time ago. I'm trying to now think, must have been 2014 or something. It was a while back. So we were, actually, that's not quite right. We were first invited to go and look at it right back when they were just developing the Granary Square and St. Martin's, you know, the university part of it. So right back at the beginning of the scheme. And we looked at it and looked at King's Cross. So this is never going to happen. I mean, it's so run down and scruffy, we just can't. And anyway, of course, we were proved completely wrong. So sort of 4 years later, whatever it was bustling and really exciting. And it was pretty obvious that they were doing something really great up there. So we went to see them then, and this must have been about 2015 or something. We said, look, have you got anything coming up here? And they did, but they were in the new buildings, you know, in the ground floor, the new office buildings they were building. And the bit that was much more attractive to us was being in the period stuff, with the Victorian architecture, and more of a sense of history and whatever. So we decided to wait until the next lot of old buildings were refurbished, which was Coal Drops Yard. So we've been hoping to get back in there for ages because, you know, it's an area of London and a landlord that we were really keen to work with. So, yeah, we were delighted when we got in. I think we bid for it in late 2016. Our offer was accepted in 17. We opened in 18. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's called The Drop, which is a wine bar and diner.
Well, so we've got quite a lot up there. So we have a Barrafina there as well.
Right.
We have a big terrace outside Barrafina called Parian, which is a sister restaurant of Barrafina, but where you grill your own food on tabletop grills, which is quite fun. And then we have Casa and Plaza Pastor, which is a part of our Mexican taqueria restaurants, below Barrafina, and The Drop, which is a wine bar as well. So we open 5 restaurants in Cold Drops.
Wow.
Yeah.
You practically own it.
You're quite a big part of the F&B in the Cold Drops Yard part of it, yeah.
Yeah. And your new partner, Crispin Somerville, he first worked with the Harts in Mexico.
So he was my partner.
It's like a family affair.
He was my partner in Mexico City, exactly. Yeah. So we started work together in 1996 or something, and then he stayed in Mexico after I left, came back, and we'd always been talking about, doing Mexican food in London, because we'd, fallen in love with Mexican cuisine when we lived out there.
Yeah.
And it took us a long time of dithering around and, not doing anything to get round to doing Mexican food finally in 2016, when we opened El Pastor in Borough Market. And then so Crispin started working together in the restaurants back then with just the El Pastor bit. And then after a while, he slowly became a part of Harts Group, the sort of parent company, and sort of joins us across all our stuff.
Yeah, fabulous. And so you work with your brothers, you mentioned earlier on, and what are the advantages of working
with I've got 2 brothers. So I started working with my brother Eddie back when we did Fino. Mm-hmm. And he, about 3 years ago, moved to Palma in Mallorca, where he's opened his own restaurant there. So he remains a shareholder of Harts Group, but he's not operationally involved anymore.
Okay.
And then when we opened El Pastor, my brother James, the youngest brother, came over from working in the city. He had a successful career as a derivatives broker and came over and started working with us in 2016. So we sort of, there was a bit of a crossover when there was all 3 of us, but now exactly it's James and I, Eddie's in sunny Majorca.
Okay. And I mean, you seem very close to your brothers. Is that, you even have the same tailor, is that right?
Eddie and I always used to have the same tailor, who's a guy called Sherlock Hart. I mean, we shared the same. I'm Kingly Street, who's an amazing sort of octogenarian West Indian guy who made us suits for years. Anyway, so yes.
Do you still get your suits made from him?
No, we don't wear suits so much anymore. So, we used to when we started, but because, our pastor's quite informal and Barrafina's quite informal, the suit sort of these days feels a little sort of overdressed for most of our restaurants. So I'm in a suit much less than I used to be. He can probably see.
So tell me, what are the key factors to getting a restaurant right?
Well, I think you need to try and make it best in class, or the best it can be for what it's trying to be. Do you know what I mean? That doesn't mean the smartest or the most expensive or the most fancy or whatever, but if you're going to be a burger restaurant, it needs to be the best one, or a tapas restaurant, it needs to be, as close to best in class as it's possible to be. I think, for us, food has always been incredibly important. It's not to say all successful restaurants, food is the main driving factor, actually. There's plenty of very, very successful restaurants where food is secondary to atmosphere and service and such like. But I think you do need a certain degree of dedication, of perseverance, keeping at it. One of the things we say sometimes is it's all very well, a restaurant's only as good as the last service you ran. Mm-hmm. It's quite easy as a restaurateur to be very focused. You open the restaurant, you're very focused, you're there the whole time. You get up in the morning, you go to work, you make sure it's as good as it can be, which is relatively easy in the short term. But then after 12, 15 years, you wake up in the morning and you've got to try and find the energy to go and still make it as good as it can be. All those years later, it takes a lot more self-discipline and energy. So it's very easy for that initial enthusiasm to fade, and that keeping focused is very important.
Yeah. all very good advice for anyone thinking of going into the industry. So if not a restaurateur, what would you have been?
I don't know. I mean, I started in the working as a money broker, and so I don't know whether that would have, under different circumstances, worked or not. I always said I definitely wasn't going to have anything to do with restaurants, having seen sort of my father and the challenges involved in running a restaurant there. I don't know. Since I've been doing restaurants, I haven't thought about doing anything else. Not yet, anyway.
Amazing. So, Sam, just lastly, tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
God only knows. I used to when we had the nightclub in Mexico. I used to DJ. Crispin and I were the DJs when we first started. And actually, sort of with my kids a little bit older, I've got back into playing records again and buying electronic music. And in fact, DJed at the last festival we think that took place on planet Earth in South Africa on something like March the 12th, just before the whole world went into lockdown. So you probably didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that. And that's brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing.
No, that's a pleasure.
So thank you so much for your time today, Sam. And it's been great chatting with you. So guys, if you want to follow Sam on Instagram, Sam, what's your Instagram handle?
At Sam Hearts Group.
Perfect. And I'm at Posh Nosh Girl. Thank you.
Bye.
See you soon. Bye.